Dr. J Interviews is a collection of candid conversations with good Black professional men regarding life and career choices. I'm your host, Dr. J McCarthy. Yeah, I want to go ahead and welcome to my show, Mr. Rogers. How you doing today, brother?
I'm good. How you doing today?
Doing good, man. You see, I turned my orange lights on for you, man. Solidarity with my brother, man.
I tell people I didn't choose his lifestyle. Okay, we die hard. I'm born and raised Cleveland, so we die hard for life.
Yeah, for you guys that can't see, and I might post a picture of Mr. Rogers is a diehard Cleveland Browns fan. I always give him grief, but I appreciate the fans because you guys are so, the solidarity is unparalleled.
So I was a season ticket holder. I went to all the 0-16 games. I went all to the 1-15 games. So I was there every day. And I mean, every game in the snow and the cold. You know what I'm saying? We drive 2.5 hours just to get to the games. And you know what I'm saying? That's 5 hours just for heartbreak and anger.
And anguish. It just Hey, it's nothing like you guys, though. You know, now I'm in here in Dallas country, and I can't stand the Cowboys, man. You get me started on the Cowboys, I'm going to put that T.O. picture when he's standing on the stars. So, you know, I ain't no fan of that.
I don't like Dallas. I don't like Dallas fans either. I just feel like they cry for no reason. They're like, what y'all got to cry for? Like, y'all went to the dance many times, and yeah, I mean, it's like y'all had great players, and y'all had good stuff. Like, yes,
just y'all that suck. That entitlement, man.
Exactly.
So let's go ahead and just dive right into it, man. Tell our listeners, what do you do for a living, brother?
So I am I'm a software developer, but what my niche is, I do a little website thing called Kentico. So I'm a front-end developer, back-end, and full stack. And Kentico is a content management system that we use. And I'm pretty much an expert or a subject matter expert for Kentico. And so I'm in a whole school of everything. So Kentico, their website. So I work on big government websites, big healthcare websites, any type of big website that uses Kentico. The platform allows us to leverage many websites. And it allows us to rapidly develop websites. And it allows us to do a whole bunch of really things really fast. That's pretty much it. So.
Nice. So for your, and I, like I said, I'm in IT too, and it's odd because there's not a lot of Black men in IT, but I've actually interviewed 3 guys that are in IT. So actually some of the same questions here, man. What kind of, for your position, is there specialized degrees involved or certifications that can help you in that field?
So I have my bachelor's, and I went back and got my master's. I have my master's in IT management. I feel that if you get your certifications and you just pretty much work hard in IT, my personal belief is anybody can do IT. And the reason is there's so many different levels of things you could do in IT. If you want to be a developer, you want to be front end, you're back end, you'll do database stuff, you want to do graphic design, you want to, you know, say write problems, you want to do testing, do you want to, let's say, configure servers, do you want to, I mean, there's literally millions of possibilities for every type of skill set that you think you everything that you're good at, there's something in IT that you can do, right? So yes, certifications are important, but pretty much practical experience. There's all types of different jobs, opportunities in IT. So a certification is very good, but it's pretty much self-study. So I think what makes people successful in the IT field is if you are a self-starter, you have to have the willingness to go ahead and research, and you can't just say, oh, hey, ask somebody, how do you do this? You don't ask somebody, you figure it out. So you have to have the willingness and the understanding to figure it out. And thank God we have this smart person called Mr. Google. And, you know, Mr. Google pretty much tells me everything I need to know. So if I don't know how to do something, I Google it. And because every problem there is, every problem, someone has asked the question and someone has figured it out. And usually how we kind of do things, they're like, I don't know, let's just make a random example. What's 2 + 2 = 4? Okay, I need to solve 2 + 2 = 4. So my question may be, what is 5 + 5? But I can Google what's 2 + 2, and I can derive my answer from that question. So it's pretty much how you can find the information, what's the answer you're looking for. You know, everything you use, everything that anyone has ever done, someone has solved it. So Google it, kind of, you know, use your skills of the detective work, kind of whatever, and figure it out. So I think the biggest skill set is just have the willingness to figure stuff out and just kind of always dive in, self-study, and just go get it, because ain't nobody gonna give us anything. And like you were saying, how, you know, you've interviewed a lot of Black developers, but there are actually hardly no Black developers in all my career. So I'm always the one Black person on my entire team. I'm always the one Black person in my entire floor, right? And so like some of my private, I remember working at this big private data center. It was a huge data center. We're talking about a billion dollar workplace. And there are 90 people in one room. And the agile development, and basically what agile means is you have two front-end developers, two back-end developers, a business analyst, a scrum master for each little data table. And you had seven tables. And I was the only Black person. And out of all 90 people in that entire room, this big room, I was the only Black person. So it's, you know, it's far and few between, wow. But it's come down to there's a lot of opportunity as being a developer if you're willing to put the work in. And again, like I said, you dive in, figure it out, got the opportunity, got it, get it, figure it out. Easy work.
You know, it's interesting that Google, I had said before, I used to joke, like, Google's like my daddy. I go to my daddy and ask questions, and there's a meme going around today where someone was like, I share with my kid that I'm actually older than Google. So I guess Google was originated in 1998, but I'm glad that you say that, because I really feel like in this era, you have to be a self-starter, and there is a lot of foolishness on the internet. Yet, if you use it properly, like you said, if you utilize Google, there's so much, it's a plethora of information. One of the previous guys that I interviewed, he was in a different field, but he was just telling about these correspondence courses that are for free. I mean, and a lot of those are in development, programming, web design, all these things. So the tools are out there. You know, we need to, I like this kind of form because we can speak more to it, get young bros involved and say, hey, this is another lucrative path, you know?
Yeah. So many resources out there. So you can literally just go on YouTube, how to build a website. You know, that's literally all you have to do. YouTube, how to build a website. How do you do SQL database? And literally, you can go there and watch someone do it and just follow the tutorials around. And that gives you the practical experience that you need to go to a job. I mean, you can go to one of these boot camps, pay, you know, $15,000, $10,000. You can learn a lot of stuff on your own. When I first got into development, I was working. So my path to development was interesting. So I didn't go to college to be a developer. OK, I went to college to be a nurse. And I went to be a nurse, and I failed miserably. Like, I absolutely failed miserably. Like, it was, I couldn't take it from the mental health aspect of it when people are dying on you, and that aspect, that's just not my type of personality. I just couldn't take it off. Like, oh, y'all dying. That affected me, you know, too much. Yeah. And then also, I was like 18. I don't want to be scrubbing people's booties and stuff. And I'm good on that. So, I just couldn't do it. But I got a customer service job on the phone, and that parlayed to another customer service job from an opportunity. And the opportunity was, I took that other customer service job, and I was able to work for the state. And then if I worked for the state, they had an opportunity to ask everybody want to work on the website? And no one said they wanted to work on the website. I was the only person who decided to work on the website. And I knew that was a possibility. I built computers. I played video games. Okay, this is maybe cool. I'll figure it out. All right, let's go. And I had the opportunity working the website and stayed all my time figuring it out and self-study, went home. This is before Google got really, really big, but there was still all types of tutorials. And this is, remember the Programming for Dummies, all those Programming for Dummies book back in the day. So yeah. I Yes. So I have Programming for Dummies, How to Build a Website for Dummies. So I'm with the physical book, and I'm going through page by page and going through tutorials. All my friends out clubbing, drinking, and kicking it. You know, I would spend, well, Friday I was clubbing, drinking, and kicking it. But on Saturday and Sunday, I was in the books doing tutorials and trying to figure it out. Kind of work and figure out everything I need to do. And the one thing I can say is opportunities. You get an opportunity, you only get two or three good opportunities in your lifetime. And the question is, do you squander the opportunity or do you really go all in and figure it out? And I was lucky enough to be smart as a young man and take those opportunities and really dig in and really refine my craft. And that kind of helped me propel me to how I got here.
Nice. You know, I always say, I teach my kids that about everything's about preparation. Success is where your preparation meets that opportunity. You have to be prepared for the opportunity. You know, if you have your business plan in mind, you already have it constructed, you meet that right guy, you're already prepared to go ahead and present that to him. You know, you can speak on it because you put so much research and effort into it. So you're preparing yourself for that. I love that, man. What is software developer, what you do, what's a range that someone could expect to look at, you know, from like an entry level on up to, you know, what's the potential?
So the potential, so I'm a government employee now. And as a government employee, we don't make that much money, but it comes down to, stability. So you're always, as a government employee, you're always going to make less money than any type of whatever. However, when I was a contractor, we're talking about the range. I know for a fact that in fact I can get, because as of we're talking about today, I've had four people send me job offers in the past week. I had four separate contracting firms sending me, hey, we have this contract, and it's usually anywhere from 55 an hour from the low end to up to 75 an hour. Actually, I've had in the past, the highest offer I've ever had was a $95 an hour to go to Missouri, or I think it was Little Rock, Arkansas. Yeah, Little Rock, Arkansas for a project, 95 an hour for 3 months. And then after you're on site for 3 months and then they'll pay for your housing, pay for everything, pay for flights, pay for everything. Then after that, you can work from home for remote, 95 an hour for the next 7 months or 8 months. And then from there, if they still need you, they'll bring you on, you know, kind of like a long-standing contractor. And I turned it down because a lot of things weren't adding up. A lot of things, they were saying crazy stuff, and it just didn't feel right. And so the opportunity was there, but I was like, nah, I got small kids. I couldn't do that to my small kids. And some other little things that, you know, contractors, you know, at the end of the day, so the whole, that's another thing is learning the contracting game. So they're out here to make money off of you. So you are in the position, you are the resource. And because you're the resource, you can dictate what you want to do and how much you can make. And so, you know, if when you're in IT, there's so many people out here. There's too many jobs and not enough skilled people to do them. And so we're always in a hot demand. And when you're in a little niche, like I have a very little small little slice, that slice is always in demand. And I'm always going to have an opportunity for whatever I do in order to get a job.
That's what's up, man. So walk me through a typical day, man. Mr. Rogers wakes up and then what?
So because I'm a senior developer, I'm attached to my hip, to my phone. Like earlier today, even before we started doing this, I was texting a customer of mine of asking a question. I'm typing, asking to answer questions. So look at my phone, look at email, see if it's anything important. We use Teams, and Teams is kind of just like a messaging software for Microsoft. So see if I got any messages from anybody important. All right, we're good. So after that, you know, wake up to the kids, you know, get breakfast, make coffee. Number one important thing, gotta get some coffee in. Get the coffee, we good. And then it comes down to get on the computer and just kind of set my day up to see what I need to do. So as a developer, we're pretty much project-based. So I know what project I'm working on, and I have a delivery date. And I have to basically make sure that this is done by this delivery date. So as long as I can do my little steps, my little chunks, and we do this methodology called Agile. And what Agile is pretty much is a way to, we have every 2 weeks, We have so many items that we have to develop, or so many, we call them stories, so many stories that we have to develop and that we have to actually produce. And so let's say this sprint, I have to do 5 stories. And so I know that if it's, you know, I'm almost close to my end of my sprint, then I have to knock these 3 stories out depending on how complicated or whether they are. So I'm going to have to email somebody and do some development work, figure out more requirements, contact whomever, and do whatever to kind of fill that gap. Also, because I'm the senior developer, I mentor our junior developers. A lot of people kind of ask me questions on how to do stuff. And then we have like our project managers, you know, they ask questions and whatnot, say, hey, what's the status of this project? You know, just regular work day of meetings, development a little bit, meetings, development a little bit, answering questions, helping people, developing. So I love being a developer because for me, it's like I get paid to play with puzzles all day. So it's fun because sometimes the funny thing is the stuff that I hate the most is the easy stuff. The easy stuff is like, I don't want to do this. Like, come on, this is trash. Like, come on, bro. Like, give me something hard. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not gonna make it. Like, I'm not gonna make this deadline. But that pressure. That's fun. That's where the fun aspect of development comes from. So,
oh, that's what's up, man. So I'm a transition right here. I'm gonna tell our listeners how we know each other. We had actually met through a mutual friend. I don't know. He was a coworker of mine before I moved out of Ohio. I don't know if you guys had worked together at the state, maybe.
Yeah,
how you guys were introduced to each other, but. So we send text all the time. It's a group of us, professional man, and we're just goofy text or whatnot. And we got this inside joke about the Robert Guillaume or that Benson, and I'm gonna talk about that later. We're gonna address that a little bit later. But I want to dive into your childhood, man. Tell me a little bit about yourself growing up.
So I'm from Cleveland. I'm from Cleveland. Moved to Columbus when I was like 11, fifth grade. Cleveland's rough. From rough area, from poverty. We ain't have nothing. A lot of bad stuff. I'm the youngest of 4. I have 3 older brothers. I'm counting my head like, oh, I'm gonna tell you how many brothers I got. So I'm kind of 1 of 4. And we just had a very rough upbringing. You know, drugs, violence. You know, very true story. I remember 4th grade. I'm walking to pick up my friend. Walk to his house because on our way to school, and we're walking, pick him up, and we go pack the way we always go, and we find a gun laying in the actual grass. And I remember my friend picked it up, and again, we're 4th grade, so he friend picked it up, and I'm like, oh, whatever, I've seen guns before, it's no big deal, all right, whatever. So, friend picked it up, and then another boy, 6th grader, came over, and he took the gun from my friend, and he literally put it into our face like that, and cocked the hammer. And I remember physically seeing the bullets of the revolver in my eye. I told him, get it out of my hand, bro. And then he licked one of it, pop, and popped it in the air. And this was on my way to school, and then after he shot the gun in the air, I talked to my boy, like, let's go, whatever, like, no big deal, like, let's go. And so then we get to school, and I remember the police came, pulled me out of class, and they talked to me and said, well, what happened? How did this happen? Why? Who found the gun? All that stuff. And I'm like, oh, who found the gun? Whatever, no big deal. Went home. I don't think I ever told my mom, because I asked my mom about that story. She said, oh, they never called me. I never knew that ever happened. But that was the kind of neighborhood that we were in of just, you know, this is just the stuff that, you know, you just figure it out. You see the stuff, you deal with it. You know what I'm saying? So my mom had the opportunity to move to Columbus. From Cleveland, and that was an opportunity that put me on the right path. And had I not had the opportunity, who knows where I would have ended up? Simple and plain.
That's what's up, man. You know, a lot of people that aren't from Ohio, and I please understand to my listeners, I'm not trying to glorify violence or anything. But if you don't know anything about Ohio, I've met people from different states, and they're like, Ohio. And I'm like, Ohio is crazy, man. Yeah, you thinking, you know, but those cities, you know, like Cleveland, you know, Toledo, Dayton, Cincinnati.
Columbus.
It was rough, man. Columbus is definitely getting, you know.
Columbus crazy. Columbus is crazy right now.
There was a lot of stuff going on that you wouldn't imagine, man. And for young brothers, man, it's I celebrate brothers to make it out, you know, make it through and take care of their families and stuff, because we had a lot of obstacles. So you did your great schooling, and then when you moved to Columbus, what grade were you in then?
I was in fifth grade, and so fifth grade was that good year of transitioning of again, I was exposed to all that stuff, but it didn't change who I was, and I was able to kind of, all right. And so we were always, like all my brothers, they were all into major work, which were magnet schools. And so they all went to magnet schools until, you know, Cleveland happened. And so I came here. I went to a magnet school, and it wasn't really magnet. It was just a alternative school. So it was like a little magnet school. But it was like, you know, going to a concrete jungle to, oh my God, there's a creek. And I had never seen a real creek before. And I can catch tadpoles. And that was the most amazing thing ever in my entire life. I'm like, oh, this is great. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is some wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so transitioning from there and coming to Columbus, and, you know, I was able to excel in school. Well, until high school. High school, I was real bad. So my problem was, we don't have a lot of direction sometime. And so I'm a single mom, four boys. My mom had to, you know, she had goals, and she had to work two jobs. She put herself through school, and she had to figure it out and do stuff herself. And so you can't give all the attention to one child when you have to give all the attention to another child, and she's, you know, spread thin. So I wasn't the best student at the end, and I was straight A student, 4.0 student all through middle school, high school, ninth grade, I was 4.0, 10th grade, I was 2.5, 11th grade, I was like a 1.0, and then 12th grade, I was a 0.5. And it was literally just because of, the problem is I already knew how to beat the system. They wouldn't let me graduate early, because the school I went to was an educational school, and they made me take full classes. So, you know me. I'm like, hey, I ain't going to these classes. Like, y'all can do what y'all want to do, but I'm not going to these classes. I'm going to skip every day. Like, y'all can do what you want, but I'm not going. And so they didn't believe me, and I just fell in all the classes. But that's the thing, because I already knew in my head that I was going to become a nurse. And I already needed one class to graduate. I needed two classes to graduate. And so I already knew exactly what I had to do to pass those classes. I could ace the classes really easy. And what else I have to do? So I had the strategy to win, and I knew what I had to do. So
you're going to be a 6 foot, what are you, 6 foot four? 6 foot?
Yeah.
6 foot four nurse, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And they need it. You know what I'm saying? These big dudes. So, you know, I'm a good 300 whopper. I'm a 300 pounder. Yeah. So, you know, they needed the big, you know, big people, you know, up and down and whatnot. So, it didn't work out. And I just worked. And then I had the opportunity of the customer service on the phones of, hello, may I help you? How's your day today? You know what I'm saying? Just straight customer service. And had the opportunity to work on the website. And then after that, went back and got my bachelor's. I remember getting my bachelor's. I went to Franklin University. I went to get my bachelor's, and I remember talking to Jason a lot, because Jason, he's older than me. I had no idea what I wanted to do in school. Mm-hmm. I went from major to major to major to major, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to be. I didn't know what I want to do. And as soon as I got the opportunity to work on the website, I was like, you know what? I'm going to change my major to web development.
Yeah.
And that's really pretty much of how I kind of started, and I could not have succeeded until I got that actual that degree, because no one would give me an opportunity. So back in the day, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, you couldn't get in the door without a bachelor's degree. You couldn't do anything. Now, if you have a certification, hey, I can, or a certification, or you have a portfolio say, hey, I built this site, I built this site, here's my credit. You can easily get a job, fairly simple. Yeah. But back in the day, you had to have a degree. And so got my degree.
You know what I like about these interviews? Because a couple of you guys are, if you're not my buddy before the interview, you're going to be my homie afterwards. You know, so I made good friends. And me and B have known each other for a few years now. And we're kind of similar in that way, too, man, because I went to Ohio State for a little bit. And then I told the story previously and I dropped out. But I went back to Franklin as well. So, yeah, I ended up going to Franklin. We had a lot of coworkers that went there. And their program was just more conducive to a family man at that time.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And it was reputable. At this point, I kind of want to tell people there's two reasons why I really wanted to interview you. You know, one, and I call him B, his first name is Brandon. You're just a good dude, man. You know,
thank you.
And for people that don't know, you know, for women out there, if you happen to be listening, guys have conversations. We talk offline. We talk about our families and stuff. And, you have homies that are disgruntled, all this kind of stuff. But what I can honestly say, this man is a stand up guy. He sincerely loves his family. He has a beautiful family. Kids are incredibly intelligent. He raised them to be Browns fans, but you know.
Of course. Brainwashing.
They're beautiful kids, man. So I just.
Brainwashing.
I want to just acknowledge you on that because, like I said, you know, we have this narrative that there's not a lot of good brothers out there. And I'm like, man, I know that's not true. You know, I have a circle of people that's like out there. They're loyal to their woman. They speak highly of their woman when their woman's not around, you know, and that speaks to your character, man. So I did just want to put that on air. And the second reason is.
Thank you.
We had an offline talk before, and like I said, I had known B for a year or so, and he went through a challenging situation, you know, and this is kind of like that Benson, that inside joke. But do you want to tell people what you went through there?
So, so this might be a crazy story that's not even going to be logical, but I was, okay, so first I have to tell you, so my hobby since I was 22 years old has been Muay Thai kickboxing. So these hands are serious. I tell them, y'all don't be believing me, bro. These hands are ridiculously serious, bro. Like, I'm trying to tell y'all, serious. All right? Anywho. So I did Muay Thai kickboxing for many, many, many years. And I was actually training for a fight in Chicago, and I was 27 years old. I've always been big game, so, you know, I was good, super heavyweight. I was excited. So one of my biggest things is I refuse to, I'm very competitive. So I will work out as hard as I can. I do not like the little people, skinny people, think they better than me, think they can run faster than me. Maybe you can run faster than me, but I'm going to finish everything. It don't matter. It don't matter. I'm none of that. I'm too competitive. And after that, we still spar like crazy. So I'm just really competitive. And so we were running a 5K before we were training for 2 hours. And we were doing this for almost at least three full weeks. So maybe 4 days a week, we're training hard. We're talking about run 3.1 miles or 3.4 miles, whatever. And then we'll go ahead and we'll train, you know, all of our pad work, our kicking, everything, just getting the cardio ready for the fights. And a week before the fight, my buddy asked me to help him. My buddy's father asked me to help him move. So I cool bet. I'm always big. I always help everybody move. I'm the mover. I mean, I move everybody. So it's always been my life of moving people. So like I would ask no more. Need my help. All right, fine, whatever. All right. So I'm helping him move on the third floor, and I remember I'm helping him move. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be terrible. So I'm kicking him with my buddy on a Friday night, and I sleep on the couch. I don't know if I sleep on the floor, and I'm 27. And I get up the next morning, and my feet are numb. And I'm like, all right, no big deal. My hands are a tiny little bit tingling, like the fingertips are tingling, and my toes are tingling. And for some reason, my breathing was a little different. And I'm like, all right, no big deal, but maybe I slept wrong or something. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And so I remember being so tired of moving. I ain't never been this tired before. Like, all right, whatever. So that I remember going back and forth, going up three flights of stairs and coming down there, and I helped him move. I was tired. And then he took us out to dinner. And I remember eating at dinner, I was like, man, I need to go to the hospital. This is something's going on. I don't know what's going on, but I can feel my breathing. Something was wrong with my breathing. I'm like, I'm a well-lubed machine. I know I'm good, but something's going on. So I went to the ER, and I always tell people, man, if you got insurance, don't play around. If you don't got insurance, if you think something's going on, go to the hospital. It's just money. Who cares? Your life is worth more than any type of money. I'm sorry. I go to the doctor. My life is worth any type of money. Mm-hmm. So I went to the ER, and they did an X-ray on my chest and was like, you good. Nothing wrong with you. Go home. I'm like, okay, yeah, my breathing's fine, but my fingers are still tingling. All right, whatever. I went to the ER like I'm supposed to. I went home. And I remember going home, and I'm talking. I'm chilling, and I remember, like, now I'm getting pain. And so I went to sleep next day. Now my fingertips move down to my hands. Like, now all of this is numb. So now my hands are numb. And now I'm trying to pick up a glass. I can't pick up a glass like this. I'm actually have to hold it like this now because the strength of my hands is something's wrong. And now I'm noticing when I'm walking, I'm falling around everywhere. I'm like, oh, what's going on? All right. So, you know, that's day two. Day three, I go to my sports medicine doctor. I'm like, hey, I don't know what's going on. But something's going on. My arms, my legs are going numb. I don't know why. And he's like, oh, you may have a pinched nerve in both of your upper disc and your lower disc from all the Muay Thai kickboxing. So we need to schedule a MRIs. And all right, whatever. So all right, fine. I'm thinking everything's okay. Then my wife, or my fiance at the time, she had a surgery that she had to go through. And I remember going to the that morning, we're going to the hospital, and she was driving by herself, and I was going to meet her there. And so I remember going to McDonald's, and I'm getting a an orange juice and, like, you know, some type of whatever. And I'm drinking the orange juice out of the straw, and I remember drinking the straw, and the straw was just different. I'm like, okay, so now my hands is messed up. Now my legs can't move, and now I'm drinking through the straw, and I can't make proper suction on the straw. I'm like, all right, whatever. So go to the hospital, and my fiance wife's going to surgery. And while we're praying to God for her to have a safe, successful emergency, half my face goes paralyzed. So now half my face is paralyzed. And now I'm I forgot to tell you, so I'm in so much pain at nighttime. Like, my shoulders are so much pain. I'm a stomach sleeper. And so I have to kind of sleep like this. It was so much pain to lift up my shoulders that I couldn't even do anything. And so now, like, my wife is getting into surgery. Half my face is paralyzed. And after we pray, I go straight to the ER. And walking down the ER, I'm like, hey, something's going on. I think I'm having a stroke. I'm a big dude. I'm having a stroke. Somebody help me. They're like, oh, yeah, you're good. Just sit over there at the table. Somebody get to you. So I'm like an hour in, think I'm having a stroke. Ain't nobody help me. I'm just like, oh, man, this is a messed up way to die. You know what I'm saying? This is like this is messed up. All right. My logic is, because I'm a developer, and so my logic is, well, the best place to be in someplace like this is in the hospital at the ER. So we good. I'm in the ER. I'm good. So we go in there, and they give me an MRI, because my original doctors forgot to schedule it. And so they forgot to schedule it. And so I go to the ER. So give me an MRI, and they put me in the cage to check my head, and they check my back. And because of the my face is paralyzed. And so they thought I had MS, and I was an MS attack. And so after everything, they said, you don't have MS. And what they think I had was Bell's palsy. And Bell's palsy is just your normal, your face can go, if you're sick or something, you can get Bell's palsy. It's a very common thing. So I'm like, okay, but what about the fact that I can't hardly walk anymore? Like, I'm fumbling everywhere. My hands are on fire. I can't touch. And so the feeling is, you know how when your hands or feet go to sleep?
Yeah.
Imagine that times 20. So it was to the point where it was like a burning sleepiness, like completely numb. I could hit something, you couldn't feel it, but you can kind of feel it. And there was like burning kind of pain sensation. And then, like, I had a cluster. It feels like somebody took like a broom and they just put it, all their pressure, like on a back cluster. That's how it felt. And I just couldn't shake it. And since I'm a biter, I'm like, all right, it's just a little pain. I'll be all right. So after all that, Bell's palsy, they sent me home. And I remember going home. So this is my third time at the ER. This is, and then I would say I went to the doctor like three more times in between that first week. So we're 7 days. This is my third time in the ER. And this is like my third, fourth time to the doctor. So I go home and I'm crying. I just know I'm going to die. Like, you know, when you're in a situation where you know you're going to die, it feels a little different because when you're in the ER, you are progressively getting worse. And no one's helping you, and you're supposed to go to the doctors, and they're supposed to tell you things, and like whatever. So my church at the time, they made us sing gospel song, and I remember Pastor Troy was like, "Whenever you're ever in a crunch or you're ever feeling bad, just sing a gospel song, and you'd be good." And I ain't know no gospel. I'm Project Pat. You know what I'm saying? I'm Priest Mafia. You know, that's the kind of guy I am. Okay, you know what I'm saying? I was known as NWA. So that's the kind of music and rock and roll. I'm a hardcore rock and roll too. So I'm just, that's the kind of music I listen to. And but the song we had to sing every day when we left church was "My Name Is Victory." And basically, honest to God on everything, that was everything I needed at that time to be confident that I was going to be good. And so I start singing that song. I'm in tears. I'm in the dark by myself, and I can't sleep. And I'm thinking I'm going to die. I start singing that song, and I thought it was going to be good. Next day, got worse. Day after that, got even worse. And then a good friend of mine. So then now my wife is out the hospital, and she's at home. And I remember driving to her house, which is stupid because I couldn't feel my feet. But I, you know, I can't feel my feet when I'm still driving, whatever the heck. So I'm driving her house, and I had a friend of mine, and she's like, "B, I haven't talked to you in a long time. I know you was your back issue. How's everything going?" I was like, "Look, I've been progressively worse. Every time I go to the ER, they keep sending me home. I think it's now some type of neurology issue or whatever, some neural issue or whatever." It's like, "Give me a second. Let me call my friend." Well, her friend was a neurosurgeon, and her neurosurgeon friend, she called him, and she was like, and she told me later, he'll never answer the phone because he's busy doing neurosurgery stuff, which I can only imagine is some pretty important stuff that you can't answer the phone for, right? Like, you're a neurosurgeon. And so I'm talking, so he calls me immediately. So we're talking, and he told me, like, "Look, go to this hospital and say, do not leave until they see you. And here's my partner's information. Somebody in my partner will see you, blah, blah, blah." Well, during this whole time, I Google all my symptoms. And that's why I trust Mr. Google. I Google all my symptoms. And I told the doctor while I was in there, I think I have this rare disease called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And they laughed at me. And they said, "No, you don't have Guillain-Barré syndrome." And the reason is, what happens is Guillain-Barré syndrome starts in your feet. The numbness starts in your feet and goes up. Once it gets past your diaphragm stops and you die because your diaphragm is a muscle. So as of me entering the hospital, at the beginning of the story, I know it's been a long-winded story, but in the beginning of the story, my feet, it was a tiny bit of tingling in my feet. Well, by this time, the back of my throat and my cheeks and the back of my mouth was numb, completely numb. So everything was still starting to really shut down or whatnot. And there's like, "Well, I don't think that because of the numbness in your throat and numbness in your face and all that stuff." And I'm like, "Well, this is what I Googled. And everything's going on that I'm Googling says I got this what I got. So I need to stay here. I'm not going home because I'm in the ER three separate times. And y'all keep sending me home, and I'm about to die. So y'all need to do something." And sure enough, they admitted me to the hospital. And then I talked to a neurologist, and we kind of talked. He says he thinks I do have it. And we got the test, which is the spinal tap. And once we did the spinal tap, I confirmed I got it, and we started treatment. And I'm still going, and this was just 10 years ago. So since then, I made a 100% recovery. I had to quit fighting, which still hurts to this day. You know, I had to quit fighting because everybody's soft. my, you know what I'm saying? My neurologist, he's soft. My sports medicine doctor, soft. Wife is definitely You didn't get brain damage. Now, true story. Now, I am not going to lie to you. True story. So I did get my, when I went to the, I got my MRI and my head doctor, not going to lie, the first thing I thought was like, oh, snap. My mom and my fiance, right, I do got brain damage from getting hit in the head. Because while I was training, my homeboy kicked me, cold cocked me, bow, just right on the chin, and oh, just took it. Like, okay, we good. So, beautiful kick to the jaw, and I just took it to the chin. So I really did think I had nerve damage, but no, I had to quit fighting. But so the problem is now is so with. What Guillain-Barré syndrome is, so basically Guillain-Barré syndrome is, it's your immune system attacks your nervous system and it leaves you paralyzed. And so it's a 1 in 100,000 people occurrence. So if you think of the population of a million people in a city, you're only going to get 10 a year. So, I mean, it's really very rare. It happens. I'm susceptible to it. And, you know, it can happen again. You know, the first few years I was living in fear and whatnot, especially we're in the middle of a pandemic. And so Guillain-Barré syndrome is, if you're susceptible to it, your body is basically any type of sickness can trigger it. So during this pandemic, as you know, J Mac knows, I'm living in a bubble. Like my whole family, we're in a bubble. We ain't going nowhere. Friends, I don't want to see y'all. Y'all don't want to see me. You know what I'm saying? Y'all can hit me with the phone. We can voice chat, but I ain't going nowhere. I ain't going to nobody's house. Ain't nobody coming to my house because of with the fear of if I get a reoccurrence, you know, and don't nobody know how I feel when you 100% perfectly strong man and you knocking people out. And then the next thing you know, you can't even walk and you were so weak, you cannot open up a bag of potato chips. Like, literally a bag of potato chips. I literally can't open them up. And it just comes down to, you know, I can get it again. And we found out afterwards that my immune system is naturally low. And so people who have naturally low immune systems, they actually are susceptible to what those things called? Autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. So rheumatoid arthritis, any type of autoimmune disease, people who have naturally low white blood cells, they can get autoimmune disease. So my number was called.
Hey, you know, and for like you guys listening, that's where the joke came from because he was describing that to us, and one of us was like, "You got the what, Robert Guillaume? You got the Benson?" But on a serious note, man, he told me, you know, sometimes when people say stuff to you, it kind of makes you just freeze in your place, man. I was working out in the garage, and I remember I was talking to you, and I walked outside my garage, and I just paused, and he told me this story, and I did not move that whole entire time. I was just like. When you hear people's testimony, that's such a powerful testimony, man. And I really appreciate that you're willing to share that with people. Because like I said, you can't see him, but he's big in stature, you know, big fit man. And what I really liked about that is you speaking encouraging words to yourself. You know, you spoke those words. You got that in your spirit.
And by the grace of God.
And I believe your friend and the timing and all that, that was, that was not happening.
Praise God.
Man.
There's not, there's no way, because at that moment in that time, I honestly felt that I was giving up because everything was going. I mean, you keep going to hospital and you keep getting sent home and like, what's going on? And the problem with the disease is there's so many symptoms of it and it's very hard to diagnose. And so every time, you know, diagnosis, and then the second part is thank God I had insurance because the only therapy is a white blood cells. It's hemoglobin. You know how people, you in a pinch in college, you need to donate that good plasma. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Anybody, y'all know what I'm talking about? Well, what they do is they take that plasma and they put it with all the other plasma and they get the white blood cells out of that plasma and they're able to render it into like an IV bag. And that IV bag cost $21,000 per bag. Yeah. And I needed 5. And after the third one, IV bag, I started having an allergic reaction and they had to stop treatment on that. And, but I was, after that, you know, they was like, fine, you're good. I mean, I was in the hospital for, I think it was 10 days, 7 or 10 days. I was in the hospital for a good bit. And then, but after that, they sent me home and was a recovery. I was in physical therapy for about 6 months. My face was paralyzed for about 8 or 9 months. That's why I tell people I'm always going to smile for the rest of my life, because there's a time I couldn't smile. And I remember, my buddies, that's why every time I smile, you can see I'm a little crooked, because I try not to, but that's just one of the things. So my muscles are still not there 100%, and they won't ever be. So you got to live with it. And so even when I lift like crazy, I don't get stronger sometimes. It's frustrating because I just want to lift everything, like don't get stronger. But when our buddy Jason and Aaron, our mutual friend, they came over the house during one of the times I messed up, and Aaron brought me a crutch. And so I had an eye patch. I don't know if it was since my face is paralyzed, I had an eye patch and I couldn't close my eye. And so they just cracking on me hard. Like I'm a pirate. You know what I'm saying? So they're just going in on me, like going in. I'm like, bro, like I'm about, like literally, like you guys sitting at home. You know what I'm saying? Three times, like y'all going in, like just going in on me about eye patch and pirate. And so the funny part, and you can ask them right now if you want, I couldn't laugh. So I would be like, because my face couldn't make the smile anymore. And so every time I laugh, like, and so it was to the point where I remember my tears are coming down I'm laughing so, they going in, like, that's, I don't know, I'm friends with these dudes, you know, bro. I don't know, I'm friends with these dudes no more, but yeah, so. I remember I'm laughing so hard, couldn't smile, but yeah. Hey, good now, so all that matters.
Man, what's so dope about that story too, man? It's just like there are good endings, man. You got through that, man. You went ahead and married a beautiful woman. You have beautiful children, man, and successful career. You're a role model, folks, man. So it's a beautiful thing, man. Like I said, you're just a good brother, man. Just all around good brother. Just wanted to say that. So let's go ahead and pivot here, man, because that was heavy, man. That was heavy.
Sorry,
I appreciate you sharing that, man. So these are just three questions that I ask everybody. It's really just two that everybody comes on this show here. So we all know that our past, you know, built us and molded us. And some things we had to navigate through, you know, to make us who we are today. But if you can go back in time and talk to the younger B, what kind of advice would you give him?
The grind harder, or start. I would say, if anything, is my advice was to start what you finished, and don't take it from, like, just start what you finished. Like, there's so many things I could have started when I was like 17, of working on websites in my basement, now I'm loading with computers. The reason I got into development, because a black brother taught us how to program at on his spare time. And so after school, me and another guy from chess club, chess club. So after chess club, we would go take the bus down to the north of the adult center or whatever, and he'll teach us how to program. And so I should have stick to that. And I have things I could have done differently by that. But besides that, man, you know, you can't live your life with regrets. You made a decision, you got man up and deal with it. So, that's about it. You know, make decisions. You got to be a man, make a decision. You have to deal with it. But just take responsibility, give it 120% everything you do.
I love that, man. You know, I got some buddies my age, man, and we talk about sometimes regrets, you know, and I had a conversation with him about this a couple of weeks ago where I'm like, brother, you're at where you're supposed to be at, man. This point in time, this point in life, all the things that you did, even if you made these different choices, you would still be at this point. And you just have to go ahead and enjoy this moment, enjoy your kids, enjoy your health.
And thank God we're at this moment in a successful-ish lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I can afford things like, you know, whatever. I can just do different things that I could never even dream of when I was a child from Cleveland. Like, none of this stuff even logical of where I'm at to where I came from type of deal. So, you know, to be blessed where I'm at, you know, at the end of the day, after going through my sickness, you know, you be blessed. I'm just blessed to be alive. And and just every day is an opportunity to grow, and every opportunity to grind harder for, you know what I'm saying, my children, grind harder to give them the opportunities that, of course, I never had. Mm-hmm. Want to give to them. I want to give them everything I can give. So got to keep grinding, because I'm nowhere close where I want to be.
Absolutely.
And you got to have that drive. Nowhere yeah. close to where I want to be. So
yeah, we have offline topics, man. You got to watch out for B, man. B is making some solid moves, and like I said, his kids are. He shares a little stuff his kids do. They smarter than wit, man. So it's a Thank beautiful you. Thing to
Thank
see.
You. Thank you.
Second question that I ask everybody, you know, like, and you guys know, you know me, I coach kids, I mentor young men, and I'm real big on strengthening your mind, body, and spirit. So what would you say, could you give advice on how you strengthen either one or all three of those areas?
So we didn't have no, like, role models or nothing, man. So us four brothers, we all did our own thing our own way. We had to figure it out our own, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, as you know me, I'm so rah, 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 be a man, rah, rah, rah. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter is, it's like, you know me. So it's like, that's just kind of my philosophy. So it's like, it's okay to fail if you gave it your all, but you got to give it your all. So for me, that's where my mental strength comes from. It's okay to fail if you gave it your all. If you gave it the college try and gosh darn it, hey, it didn't work out, and you can do something else and you can give that college try again, right? Like, all right, I failed here, right? But what did I learn from that failure, and what can I take that failure and apply to something else?
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So that's that mental fortitude, that mental strength of understanding that it ain't going to be the end of the world. You'll be okay. You've just figured out next time. And just as long as you don't ever give up, ain't no reason to give up. You're still alive. You're still in the information world. We still, and I mean, we are in a situation as Black people, as Black men, you know, we have so many opportunities that are fathers, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers, and definitely our great-great-grandfathers never had. So why would we give up any of these opportunities? Why would we just throw these opportunities away? Like, yeah, I get it. We get it. We got it. It's harder. I'm the only Black person in a lot of these spaces, but who cares? Like, I'm in this space. Let's get it. Let's get this so we can give it to someone else to give them the opportunity so they can get them spaces too. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
As far as your body, hey, you know, I always believe working out. So I'm a proponent of Muay Thai. So I love it. I enjoy the competition of beating people up, getting punched in the face. All that stuff is very, very fun to me. Like, you know, the whole process, I love it. So, you know, it takes a tough person, the reason I love Muay Thai is chess with pain. And so pain is instant gratification. And chess is a thinking man idea. I mean, it's a thinking man's game. And so in Muay Thai, is literally chess because you have to know my strengths and weaknesses. I'm not going to be as fast as you. So I have to think of things differently so I won't get punched in the face or I won't get severely hurt. And so, you know, do things. So you always got to work out. We eat healthy. I've transitioned. I'm trying to transition to 100% organic, you know. You know, try to eat healthy as much as I can and just work out. You know, we young, you only get one body. And going through the sickness, you only get one body, only one. So do what you can do to keep it.
One thing I didn't mention for my listeners, B is a chef, man. Now I call myself a grill master, but boy, he be putting these meals together sometimes. I'll be like, boy, that boy is throwing down over there, man. He do it what he get that Kobe beef and he lace it up and it'll look like he got it from a restaurant, man.
Yeah, I like to cook. You know, you just take a little time, you know, just massage a little bit, but, you know, it's good food. So yes. I'm cheap. I'm frugal. I don't like spending the money if I know I can make it better by myself.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
What's the point? I can cook it. I don't want to spend the money. So,
and, you know, I don't want to go back to something else that you had said, too. I really think I'm glad that you brought up that these opportunities we have, you know, we see what's going on with police brutality. We understand what's going on with, you know, not getting equal pay and all this kind of stuff. But when you change your perception on that, like, am I going to sit here and just keep complaining about it, or I'm going to take advantage of that, you know? And I was thinking about when you said our grandfathers and great-grandfathers. I just posted a picture yesterday of my grandfather. So my grandfather was drafted to the war. He, you know, he didn't want to go to that, you know? And it was one of those things that he never talked about. We were just taught you don't ask him about it. You know, he had to do things that he didn't want to do over there. And then when I got older, I realized he was in the 761st Tech Battalion with Jackie Robinson, you know. I used to love Jackie Robinson growing up. I had those little books with Jackie Robinson. I liked the Dodgers because of him, you know. And it was so cool to me, and I didn't know these things until I got older. But
That's dope.
Yeah, that generation, the things that they had to go through, man.
And it's insane.
It's insane. And regardless what people say about my vote doesn't matter, you realize what they went through to make an opportunity for us. You
know,
No, it's seriously, because it's the audacity of you to not even if you think like, well, my vote don't count because electoral college, of all these excuses people make up, that what they fought through just so you can walk in the store, you know, with a different person and get this access to the same groceries and things like that. There's no respect for the past, you know, and it infuriates me because it's like, how dare you, you know, it's so disrespectful of their legacy, you know, so. I'm appreciative of brothers like you, man, and I like to keep a close-knit, good group of brothers around me, man. I don't like foolishness, man, so I appreciate, man, you being part of that circle, man. Last question that I have, man, it's just a generic one. Over this conversation, is there anything that we didn't cover or any kind of advice that you want to leave for a young brother that may be interested in either going down a career path similar to yours or someone just looking for a career change in general?
So I'm always going to say, IT, man, is like, I told you, went to nursing school, failed miserably. After I went to IT, I was customer service, discovery card, you know what I'm saying, collections, all right? So I'm collections, all right? So after collections, I went to customer service, answering the call center of hey, how can I direct your call? Those were my three jobs, right? And then I had one opportunity to work on the website, and that literally the willingness of working on that one website that literally opened my career to anything I want. And not only did it open my career to anything I want, it made me want more. So I've had three failed startups. I was part of, you know what I'm saying, of a successful startup that didn't make you money. I actually almost got funded to one startup. Great idea, absolutely ridiculously good idea. Couldn't get funded and got to a process in our local funding area. And they were like, oh man, we love the idea, we love the team, but it's gonna take $1 million for us to make any money, so we're out. And literally 6 months after that, my competitors, who I've acknowledged my competitors, they start doing the idea. So literally right after that. So, and you know, but guess what? I got another one coming down the line, so who cares about all that weak stuff in the past? All I know is tomorrow, I gotta try something new. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's Reverend Project Pat right there, by the way. Try something new. But I digress. But if you gotta try something new, just keep going. Like, you know, we only get one life. It's 120% on everything you do, man. If you want to stay the status quo, you beat the status quo. But if you want more, if you want more than you got, we need an information world. If you want to trade stocks, there's a million YouTube channels right now. You can learn Forex trading or how to options or anything. There's a million people out there giving you information. If you want to build websites, if you want to do SQL, whatever. If you want to learn some type of the old school Fortran, which is old school stock marketing programming, which they make like $150 an hour, like legit $150 an hour, because ain't nobody knows how to do that. No one knows how to do that old code. And so they need people to do these very specific things that have billions upon billions of dollars invested. So they're willing to pay someone $150 an hour as a contractor for a 9-month contract to do something, right? And that's $300 a year, easy. So it's always opportunity is, you know, how hard you want it and how hard you're willing to push to go get it. So don't take no excuses.
B tells no lies in the stuff he says. And I like that. You know what they say, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. There's going to be people out there that are going to copy you. You know, they're going to try to take what you do. But you just have to realize your purpose and what God created you as. And only you can do you. You know, that creativity that God put in you, it's different from someone else. And it can get frustrating at times watching other people try to mimic you. You know, I've seen it happen in different projects that I've done in my life as well. But, you know, mm-hmm. like I encourage her and myself and anyone that's listening, you just continue to do you, man. God put that in your heart for a reason. And you just go ahead and follow through on that and he'll breathe on it. He'll breathe on it.
Righteous.
I appreciate it. And get to the end, man. I appreciate you, man. I know we've been trying to schedule this. I looked at the original interview literally for like 2 months, man. We've both been so busy. And
right.
Do you Do you have anything that you want to pub, any projects that you're working on or anything?
So one of the things I am about to do, I've been saying I have to do it for a long time. It's just, I guess I have to make it 100% legit now because I'm just so busy with life. So I am, as in like, what stays with the 21st or whatever the day is, I will say within 2 weeks, and you have to, within 2 weeks, the next, the third Saturday, whatever, you have to keep me honest, that I will teach children how to program, right? Nice. Right. So I've been talking about doing this. Just keep me honest. If you call me out, just tell me I'm a loser, I'm a failure, smack me in the face, whatever. I got to do it because a brother taught, the reason I'm in IT is because a brother, young brother I was like, 17, but he had to be maybe 33, 34. He took his time out every Tuesday and Thursday and went down, and he used to drive us around if we didn't have, we'd take the bus. It was like an hour and a half to take the bus home because it was way, so we on the east side, like in Little Roomsburg, and this is all the way up past campus, North Adult. So you know how far that number two. So you know exactly how far that length is. And so literally, you know, Tuesday and Thursdays and stuff, and you know, we hour and a half on the bus. And you know, but he went in and taught us that. And so the thing that I'm gonna create is gonna call it Black Kids Can Code. And I know I have a network of Black developers. I know a lot of Black developers. I will guilt a lot of Black developers who came on your show and like, y'all can help me. Definitely. You know what I'm saying? And we can teach, it's not about teaching, it's just exposing them how to, what IT is, and just teach fundamentals. And maybe one day they may be interested to become a software developer or graphic designer or project manager, whatever they want to be.
I love it, brother. I absolutely love it. I'll put stuff on the website once we get that up and running for content information. I really, like you said there, in your lifetime, especially as a Black male, you really remember these certain individuals to step in at key point. Even you had mentioned, you know, our mutual friend Jason at one point helping you with mentoring, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a way of just paying it forward, man. So I'm all on board with that. I'll reach out to those guys, and I have some other developers too that I'll go ahead and send your way. We'll make it happen, Captain. I'm down for that.
Okay.
So I know it's late, man. I know you're a family man. So like I said, once again, you know, I love you, brother, man. I'm thankful that we was able to link up, man. You could share your story, man. And make sure you hug the babies for them and tell them that the uncle in Texas asked about them.
All right. And the sucky thing is, you know, I was going to come to that Dallas game. So we were coming. You knew we were coming.
Oh, yeah.
We were coming. So it was circled on the date. And, I've come to Browns Dallas game. You know, it would have been awesome watching the Browns beat Dallas. Oh man, my God. Live in Jerry's World. That would have been awesome. But I was going to, you know, make it out, see y'all, man. So another time.
Yeah, we're going to link up. Once this stuff, man, we get to handle this stuff. Because I haven't been back home. I was just thinking about that today, in a decade, you know, and I kind of want to show my kids. They haven't seen. We had three when we moved here, and one was in her stomach. We call him the hybrid, the middle child. So he's half Ohio, half Texas. But yeah, I haven't been back in about 10 some years, man. It's like, they don't know where I used to live. And I took them on a Google tour one day. I put it on my phone on the TV, and I was going through the streets, but they need the experience. They got to see, like, man. I want to see their faces scrunch up like, you really?
Exactly. This is your corner store? this don't look that safe, Dad.
So to see they be unimpressed. But yeah, like I said, I appreciate you, brother, man, and we definitely be in touch, man.
All right, for sure.
All right, take it easy.
All right, I appreciate it. All right.
I hope these authentic stories show different paths to success and provide mentorship. Please be sure to visit us at drjinterviews.com for additional content and social media info. Stay resilient.